everyone, and welcome back. We're doing something kind of fun today, taking a deep dive into a recent Dear Prudence column.
Oh, those are always good for a laugh, or at least a healthy dose of, it's not just me, right?
Seriously. Okay, so for anyone who hasn't stumbled upon it before, Dear Prudence is this advice column where people write in with their, shall we say, interesting dilemmas, and Prudence doles out the wisdom.
It's kind of amazing how these letters manage to be both incredibly specific and totally relatable at the same time.
Totally. And this week's batch did not disappoint.
Let's hear it then. What juicy conundrums are we dissecting today?
So first up, we've got someone wrestling with a classic question. Is there actually a difference between loving someone and being in love?
The age-old debate. I'm guessing this is more than just a philosophical musing for the letter writer.
You guessed it. They're feeling a little insecure because their partner seems hesitant to use the L word, and they're left wondering, like, is this relationship going anywhere real?
It's easy to get caught up in semantics, but Prudence offers a really practical perspective. She says, instead of fixating on labels, focus on the overall health of the relationship.
Easier said than done, right? Like, how do you measure the health of a relationship? Is there some kind of universal checklist?
If only it were that simple. But no, there's not one-size-fits-all rubric. But that's where some psychological frameworks can come in handy. One that's often used to understand love is Sternberg's triangular theory of love, which breaks down into three main components: intimacy, passion, and commitment.
So it's like a recipe for love. You need all three ingredients in the right balance.
Exactly. But just like with any good recipe, the proportions can change over time.
Meaning?
Well, in the early stages of a relationship, passion might be the dominant flavor, you know, all those butterflies and intense attraction.
Then there.
Right. But as the relationship matures, intimacy and commitment often take center stage. It doesn't necessarily mean the passion fizzles out completely, but it might transform into a deeper appreciation for your partner's quirks or sharing those inside jokes that only you two understand.
So it's not necessarily a bad sign if those initial sparks aren't, like, constantly exploding.
Not at all. In fact, that shift can actually be a sign that you're moving into a more mature, sustainable form of love characterized by mutual trust, shared values, and that deep sense of partnership.
Which, let's be real, is probably a good thing if you want a relationship that lasts longer than a Taylor Swift song, right?
Exactly. And, you know, this makes me think about how our whole concept of love has evolved over time. Think about courtly love in medieval times, all about chivalry and unrequited passion from afar. Our modern take on romantic love is so different.
100%. It seems like understanding those different aspects of love, the intimacy, passion, commitment, can really help navigate the inevitable ebbs and flows that come with, well, just being human, being in relationship.
It's so true. It gives you a framework for understanding what you're experiencing and what your partner might be experiencing too. And that kind of understanding is crucial for navigating those inevitable bumps in the road.
Speaking of navigating relationship hurdles, this next letter is basically a crash course in everyone's least favorite green-eyed monster.
Oh, jealousy. Tell me more. It's such a universal experience, but still so loaded.
Right. This person is dealing with a serious case of the post-breakup what-ifs, like scrolling through their ex's Instagram and just, you know, spiraling.
Ah, the comparison game. Social media can be brutal for that. Though, to be fair, this was happening even before we were all posting our highlight reels online.
So true. But what's Prudence's take? How do you deal with that, like, gut punch of, they're doing great without me?
She emphasizes introspection, which might be the last thing you feel like doing when you're in that headspace, but it's key. Instead of just trying to outrun the jealousy, she says, try to figure out what's fueling it.
What do you mean?
It's like, are you truly jealous of them? Or is it more about what their newfound happiness says about you? Are their insecurities bubbling up? Fear of being alone. Jealousy is often a symptom of something bigger going on internally.
Which I guess is where therapy comes in. Prudence also mentions that.
Absolutely. And not to get too therapy speak about it, but cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, can be really helpful for reframing those negative thought patterns that jealousy loves to latch onto.
So instead of going down that rabbit hole of my ex is with someone new, I'm clearly unlovable,
CBT can give you the tools to shift your thinking to a more, shall we say, helpful place. Like, okay, it's normal to feel a pang of sadness or even, yeah, a bit of jealousy, but that doesn't mean I'm fundamentally flawed.
It's like you're giving yourself permission to have those feelings without letting them completely take over the narrative you're building in your head.
Exactly. And it's fascinating when you think about how our approach to these kinds of difficult emotions has changed over time. Years ago, it was much more of a just stuff it down mentality.
Oh, 100%. Like, slap on a smile and tell everyone you're fine, even if you're internally screaming.
Right. But thankfully, we're starting to recognize that those messy emotions are part of the deal of being human.
And maybe sometimes those negative feelings are trying to tell us something.
Right, exactly. They're not the enemy. It's more about learning how to listen to them without letting them call all the shots.
Speaking of learning and growing, this next letter takes a turn away from romantic relationships and towards something a lot of people struggle with, regardless of relationship status, making friends across generations.
Oh, interesting. What's the dilemma? I will say, some of my most rewarding friendships are with people who are way older or younger than me.
Me too. It's so easy to get stuck in our little age bubbles. But this person is feeling like, how do you actually make those connections? Like, where do you even start if your social circle is basically a carbon copy of your high school graduating class?
That's so real. I think a lot of us can relate to that.
Yeah, it's like you can meet people online, but actually forming those real-life bonds as adults can feel impossible sometimes.
Totally. And it's especially tough when you feel like you're limited to people your own age.
Right. Which, thank goodness, Prudence does not subscribe to that kind of thinking.
What's her advice for this letter writer? How do we break out of our age-segregated routines and actually meet people?
Well, she gives some pretty practical tips, like think about activities where you might naturally encounter people from different generations, you know? Volunteering, taking a class, even just joining a club related to your hobbies.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like you're automatically bonding over a shared interest instead of trying to force a connection based on age, which, let's be honest, is kind of a weird thing to base a friendship on anyway.
Totally. It's like, hey, we both have a passion for pottery and also happen to have been born a few decades apart. Want to be friends.
Right. Much better to bond over the clay and let the rest work itself out naturally.
100%. Plus, there's something about being around people who are in different life stages that just broadens your perspective, you know?
Absolutely. And there's even a name for that. It's called social capital. It's the idea that having a diverse network of relationships isn't just, like, a fun thing to do. It actually has real value and impacts our well-being.
It's like your social circle isn't just about how many Facebook friends you have. It's about having those genuine connections that enrich your life in meaningful ways.
Exactly. It's about quality over quantity. And there's actually a ton of research to back this up.
Yeah, for real. The National Institute on Aging has done some fascinating work showing that strong social connections are linked to better mental and physical health, especially as we age.
Which makes sense when you think about how important community has always been throughout history.
So true. Think about, like, multi-generational households or communities where people of different ages were constantly interacting. It wasn't some novel concept.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was just woven into the fabric of everyday life. It's like somewhere along the way, we decided to compartmentalize by age. And I think we've lost something in that process.
For sure. Okay, so we've covered love. We've explored jealousy. We've even ventured into the land of intergenerational friendships. Ready to tackle one more letter before we wrap things up?
Bring it on. I'm ready for another dose of Prudence's wisdom.
Okay, this last one is timely, to say the least, and something I think a lot of us are grappling with these days. How do you deal with those politically charged family arguments? You know, when your aunt starts ranting about those people at Thanksgiving dinner.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Family gatherings can be a minefield, especially now when it feels like everyone has an opinion they're just dying to share.
Totally. And this letter writer is specifically asking for advice on how to handle a relative whose views are, shall we say, a bit on the extreme side.
So what does Prudence recommend? How do you even begin to bridge that kind of divide when it feels like the stakes are so high?
Well, she had a suggestion that I definitely wasn't expecting. She said, and I quote, "Get your phone out and start filming. That's TikTok gold right there."
Chuckles. Okay. I mean, she's not wrong about the TikTok potential, but I'm guessing that's not her actual advice.
Definitely not. I think the point she was trying to make more subtly is that sometimes you just have to laugh to keep from crying.
Oh, for sure. Humor can be a lifesaver in those situations.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there's a deeper message here too, right? It's not just about cracking jokes at your family's expense.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that you can't always control what other people say or believe, but you can control how you react to it.
It's about setting boundaries, right? Like, you can love your family without signing up to be their personal therapist or debate opponent every time you see them.
Exactly. And sometimes that means opting out of certain conversations or just agreeing to disagree and focusing on, like, I don't know, the delicious food instead of the political climate.
Which, let's be real, is probably a better use of everyone's energy anyway.
100%. And, you know, this idea of setting boundaries, it's not just good advice for navigating political debates with your uncle. It's a life skill, really.
Oh, absolutely. Learning to communicate your needs and limits is essential for any healthy relationship, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, even your coworkers.
It's about respecting yourself and respecting others enough to say, hey, this topic is off limits, or I need a break from this conversation. And you know what? Sometimes that's the most loving thing you can do for yourself and for the other person.
100%.
Yeah.
And on that note of self-respect and healthy boundaries, we're going to wrap up this deep dive into Dear Prudence.
Always a wild ride with Prudence, am I right?
Truly.
Yeah.
But you know what? As much fun as we have dissecting these letters, I think the real takeaway here is that we all have our own inner Dear Prudence, that voice of wisdom and compassion, if we just take the time to listen to it.
I love that. It's like Prudence always says, you are not required to set yourself on fire to keep others warm.
Words to live by, for sure.
Amen to that. All right, everyone, thanks for joining us on this Dear Prudence adventure. Remember, you can find her column over on Slate's website, and she publishes new advice all the time, so there's always something new to unpack.
And who knows, maybe you'll be inspired to write in with your own dilemma.
Though, maybe keep those TikTok-worthy family rants for the dinner table.
Probably for the best.
All right, on that note, we'll catch you all on our next deep dive. Until then, take care and keep those boundaries strong.